This is the Fisher Body Historical Team interview. Today is March 8th, 2006. The time is roughly 9:05 a.m., and we are at the Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, I'd like to introduce the team.
Gary Judy.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Marilyn Coulter.
And I'm Earl Nicholson. Alex, so we're interviewing Alex Hernandez today. Alex, would you please say your name and spell it for us?
Alex Hernandez, A-L-E-X, H-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-Z.
Fantastic, Alex. Before we get into your hiring into Fisher Body, we'd like to talk about your, as you grew up in the neighborhood, we'd like to talk in, about your neighborhood experience. We'd like to... We'd like to tell you. We'd like you to tell us, you know, what it was like for your for you to grow up in the same neighborhood as Fisher Body.
Okay. I can think back to probably 1968, and vivid memories of being at Vermillion Elementary School, and my father worked there, and sometimes I would, in class, I would look out the window, and I, you know, man, my dad's over there working, they're building cars and everything, and I was a Cub Scout, too, and I bugged my father a lot. Man, I want to go in there. Can't take you in there. Well, like I said, I was a Cub Scout. We got to go have a field trip there, and I remember walking in going, oh, my God, you know, this is, I saw my dad working online. And I saw all these people putting this vehicle together, and you know, I saw people talking, working, and it was just to me, it was like a happening. It's like, wow, it was just so much stuff that was awesome looking. You know, here's a vehicle being made. I wanted to go in there for a long time, and I got to, and so I was absorbing everything. Well, right then, I pretty much made up my mind I wanted to work there. And I was playing baseball with a couple of my friends, and we were talking about what we wanted to do, and a couple of my friends, I'm going to be an astronaut or whatever. And then when it came to me, it's like, I'm going to work over there. And one of my friends who still had these two friends, Dan and Steve, and Dan looked over and what do you want to work there for? Dude, I'm going to work there. You know, I said that, and it happened. And the chance I could, I hired in there in 1981, and love it.
Fantastic, Alex. I'm going to go over some biographical information, and then I'd like for you to tell us what it was like to grow up in the neighborhood.
Okay.
So, your marital status?
Single. I got a daughter.
And your educational experience?
I went to J.W. Sexton and have some college at LCC.
And any military experience?
None.
Okay. So tell us, what was it like to grow up in the neighborhood when you were growing up, you know, when you worked around the factory, you know, what was that like?
Well, we'd see a lot of cars going in and out of there sometimes, and I had a paper out. Went to school there, had a paper out, and I played right by there, so that factory was always in my sights, whatever I did, pretty much.
So you played around the factory?
Yeah, played on the field, and every once in a while we'd bike to the parking lot that, you know, me and you would park at just to get a glimpse. They used to park cars over there, new cars there in the back, and we would go and look at them, and they were mainly Cutlasses or, you know, they were Oldsmobiles, and we would always look at those things, and I want one of these cars or whatnot.
Marilyn Coulter?
Alex, when you say the lot, which lot, what street was it on?
The north lot. So the north lot faced, it was off of Stanley Street,
okay.
Right there. And they called it the north lot. And where the employees park. And then there was a section there where they would park some cars there, you know, but they were, you know, they were going to do some rechecking on them, or I don't know, but we would look at them, and we'd play there, you know, ride our bikes there, or, and,
You say play there. You played. Did you ever get in trouble with the security guards?
Oh, yeah. I had a coal cart, and we weren't done putting the motor together, but we wanted to see this thing roll, and we used the concrete new ramp on the side there on Stanley Street and to roll that thing down, and they were chasing us, and we were laughing about it and kept doing it, and I wasn't putting two and two together, but you know, they knew my dad. They knew who I was, and I didn't know that. And they knew my father, so my father caught wind of it. And, you know, I got talking to about playing over there.
So that's a factor. It was a major part of your life, even when you were very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
And you grew up with that. And, mm-hmm. and those experiences, those are such vivid memories for you.
Oh, man, they're instilled in me. When I think about those days, you know, the air is crisp. Wasn't so much division back then, in my eyes. You know, they used to have a flowered coach on Verlinden, and we played baseball a lot, and we had like if you hit that area of the baseball, you were automatically out, because we would see these workers work on this this garden, and when you look at it from, and they had it arched a little bit so you could see what it was. It was the coach, and those guys worked on it all the time, and it was a beautiful sight. So you know, we didn't really want anything to wreck that.
Judy, Alex, could you tell us what the coach was, and do you know anything about it?
Yeah, it's the 1901 Oldsmobile curb dash.
So they had that in flowers.
Yep.
Was it?
Yeah, it was flowers right there, and they used to before they on Verlinden Street, they had open windows where they could open the windows up, and now they. Later on, they blocked them, and as a boy, I'd play there, and I could see those guys looking out, taking their breaks with a cigarette, their arm out, and they're just getting some fresh air, and they would say stuff to me, and a lot of those guys knew my dad, and so I kind of, when I had to sell something at school, that's where my first place I would go, was either to the front of the building, where they were coming in and out, or if they were already in there, I would throw the candy or whatever up to them, and then they would throw their coins or dollar bills down, and sometimes I couldn't find them, and they would throw some more stuff down to me, but those are memories that are instilled in me, that are just fond memories I'll never forget. And
so where exactly did you live in relationship to the factory?
I lived on 1804 North Genesee Drive, and that is parallel to the elementary school, Verlinden Elementary, and that's where I grew up.
So that's like we're saying within walking distance.
Oh yeah, my father used to walk to and from school. We only had one car in our family. Our family was six kids. And all we need is one car. My dad walked to and from work, and I did too when I first hired in, and then I moved out of that house and had to drive, but I was still close to it in the west side here, Lansing.
Marilyn Coulter?
Alex, you said that you always wanted to work into Fisher Body. Now, what year did you hire in?
1981.
So was that your first job that you had?
No, my first job was at Burger King.
Burger King?
Yep.
Oh.
On Saginaw, here on the west side. And I like that too. But you know, my father had a huge influence on me and on that. And don't know. It's we like cars. We like my dad always either bought a Oldsmobile or a Chevrolet or something, but you know, and it was kind of a home thing. I knew there was a future there for me. And to this day, even going to the new plan, it's I love going to work, and I never saw it as a chore to go to work there. I tell people, man, I'm living my dream. It's important to if you want to do something, do it. And,
you know, Alex, growing up that close to a plant, was there anything about the plant that you noticed? Was there any special noises or smells or anything that you could get all the way to your house? Do you remember?
Yeah, that you could hear. You could hear, like, in the wee hours of the morning, you could hear the semi trucks going by, you know, and because they used to truck them from Fisher to downtown. And you could hear that. You could hear the train going off in the early mornings. And couldn't really smell it that much when I was a kid. But the thing that I remember, too, is that when I went to bed at night, they were working. There was cars being built while I was sleeping. And my dad was on night shift. So, you know, I used to think about my dad being over there. And sometimes I used to walk over there just to see if I could get a glimpse of him, because you were able to go look up in those windows, and that place is so huge. And I used to walk with him to work, thinking that he's going to take me in there, and he's like, you got to go back home. It's like, I tried, you know, and I would go over there around lunch hour, and my dad didn't really come out that much, but he'd go to Harry's once in a while, and we played over there too.
And what is Harry's?
Harry's is a neighborhood bar that was right across the street from the plant. And you could have something to eat there, and then after work you could have something to drink.
Now, did you ever go in there as a child?
Yeah, I went in there and played pool. Learned how to play pool there. Matter of fact, I was beating a guy pretty good, and he got real upset with me, and Charlie Watts. He went and told my dad, so Dad went over there and talked to Art. And told him not to let me in there. What I used to. Actually, my first real job was I was stocking bottles in the back there for our at Harry's, and the returnables. And then I'd go in the back. There was a lot there, and we played football. And then every now and then I'd go and see what I needed to stack up. So he would let me. I could go in there when there wasn't anybody in there, and there was a few guys in there, and I learned how to play pool pretty good there.
So what was it? So Earl Nicholson, what was it like? You're in this bar. You're just a boy. There's all these gruff, dirty people coming into the bar. You know, and you're seeing them. You know, what did you think about that?
Thought it was interesting. Actually, I wanted to see what they were seeing, but you know, I couldn't go in there. Uh-huh. Kind of was envious.
Were you really?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I wanted to.
You got these guys coming in, they're dressed in coveralls and they stink and they're dirty.
Yeah, I could tell they worked. You know, and back then there was an image of a factory worker. And so, you know, prior when I saw just a little bit of it, and I wanted to go back in there every chance I could, but you know, it wasn't safe for a little boy to be in there, but it, you know, had a lot to do with my dad working there.
Alex, Marilyn Coulter, you said there was an image of the workers. What was that image that the community had of the workers?
Just grime, and you know, they put together a car that was built here, and so they took pride in it.
So Alex, tell me, you know, there's a lot of, I've heard a story that you used to play on the trains. Did you ever hop on a train?
Yeah, I hopped on the trains, and my parents would have killed me, especially my mother, if she knew that I was doing that. You know, Matter of fact, we got caught a couple times, and that was another way of trying to get in there through the back door. But you know, they were pretty watchful about, you know, who was on there or not, and it was quite dangerous.
So where would you hop on these trains at?
Over at, there's a park across Saginaw there. It's called Westside Park, and we would jump the train there, and it would take us across Saginaw into where the plant's at.
You actually rode the train into the factory?
Yeah, they used to heat the factory with coal, and we would almost get away with it because it would stop right there, and there was a big mountain of coal right there, and they didn't see us. But once we went away from that coal, they saw us, you know.
And what would they do?
Just escort us out, you know, and say, you don't have any business here, you're going to get yourselves killed, or, you know.
But you never got in trouble, they never called the police?
No, they never called the police. They showed up, but that's where I think they knew. They knew my dad, so they just kind of, you know, better. And it was always me, because a couple of my friends, their dads didn't work there, and they just knew what came from me, so they never had anything said to. It was pretty mainly me. They knew where it started from, and it was me trying to get in there.
So, where did you go to high school at?
J.W. Sexton.
J.W. Sexton. Right there. And where is J.W. Sexton?
It's on Michigan Avenue, so it'd be south of the plant.
So J.W. Sexton's right in view of the factory.
Yeah.
And what was that like, going to school, going to a high school where, you know, where the factory's right there? You go, you get out, you go to school, you come out, you know, the factory's there.
That's what I was saying earlier. A lot of it, that factory was in my view. 90% of the time of my, whatever, I was outside or when I was playing sports, even when I was a little boy, when I went to Verlinden, it was there. And my dad worked nights, so my dad would come out on his breaks to see me play Little League on the north side. And then when I played football on the south side of the plant, he would come out there and watch me, too. So it was always... Matter of fact, when I got a little bit stronger, when I played baseball, we would hit that factory with the baseball. Actually, I broke the plant manager's window. I didn't know whose window that was. And they end up, I wasn't the first one to do it, but, you know, it became a big deal when I did it because my dad worked there, so. But they put a fence up.
So you broke the plant manager's window. Yeah. Is that one of those where your father comes home and what does he do? Does he slap you on the back?
Actually, the ball was in there. My dad was working. And when I got up to go to school the next morning, the ball was on the kitchen table in the breakfast nook when I got up.
The ball was on the kitchen table.
So plant security saw that, and it was at night. I don't know who the plant manager, I want to say Chenoweth was maybe the plant manager then, I'm not sure, but they went in there, and they got that ball, because he wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
My dad worked there, so they gave it to him, and he brought it home. And
do you still have that ball?
No. No, I don't have that ball. But my dad didn't say too much about it because he just knew. I was just getting, maybe you guys are a little bit too old to be playing over there. And, you know, so.
All right, fantastic. You know. So, you're high school. You're senior year in high school. You're about to graduate. And at what point had you decided that you worked that, you know, that you were going to, I mean, how did you go about the process of getting hired in the fishing body?
Well, I was a little ahead in school, so I got out a little early. And my dad came home and said they were going to hire. So I went out to the south side of the plant and went there at 3 o'clock in the morning with couple of my older friends that were already graduated, and waited till 8 o'clock in the morning to get this little card to fill out and try to get a job there. Well, for the first couple days, I didn't hear anything. And my dad said, well, maybe I'll talk to somebody. No, I didn't want him to. They used to have a phrase, I'll see if we can. I can get your card pulled. Somebody can talk to you. Well, they called me, and a guy by the name of Dick Budd, and he started asking me questions, and he said, saw what year I was born, and said, well, you're not 18 yet. That's why I graduated. And I had a little business card that was a diploma, and I pulled that out. And it was March, and I didn't turn 18 till that May, 2 months later.
So you're saying that when you hired into the factory, you were
17
years yep. old.
And he told me to keep my mouth shut for 2 months, so I did. So, and anyway, and when I went to, come weekend, I had to go there on a Saturday morning for my physical. And when I walked home, now I was working at Burger King at the time. And that day, I happened to get my federal income tax in the mail that day. And I opened it, and it was, I don't know, $300 and some. And my dad said I was going to make that every week. And I was just thinking, what? You're going to make that every week at that place? And I was like, God, what am I going to do with this money? But that's when reality started hitting. Because I didn't know what I was going to. I wasn't even on my mind about what I was. I knew that they paid good money, but I just wanted a job there. So as far as pay, it wasn't really my focus. It's even like that today. You know, we get a good wage and everything, and I don't even think about that. You know, I'm in a place where I'm happy, and yeah, I get good money, but that's why it's so important to be where you're at if you want to work.
Marilyn Coulter?
Alex, I just want to know, what was it that your dad did in the plant?
My father was an assembly worker on the line, and then later became management. Now, and also, I'll go back. When I, in 81, they were trying to get me to go on management. And I've already established a lot of friends by then. And I watched guys become management, and I watched how they kind of changed a little bit, you know. And so I never really wanted to go there because I wanted to keep my friend. My friendships are important to me. And so I didn't go on management. I stayed and hourly.
So oftentimes people knew, was your dad a manager a good portion of the young part of your life?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, they would kid me and say, well, when are you going on management?
Okay.
And that kind of bothered me a little bit. Because they had an image back then. They were rough, and I really didn't want to do that. Now, my dad was a pretty good boss because my father knew the contract, and so he didn't really have very many battles.
So what was it like coming into the plant and being a boss's kid? Was there privilege? Was there special treatment? Or did you get kind of...
Well, there was maybe a little bit of special treatment as far as management, but there was a lot of... you know, they would, like I said, they would kid me about going on management or whatnot. And then also, I wanted to do a good job because I always thought about my dad. I didn't want to make my father look bad. And, so I'd go to work, and they expected a little bit more out of me, and I'll admit I had a lot of trouble with that sometimes because I was almost allowed not to make any mistakes, and I've had supervisors tell me, "And you know better, Nan. This is not unacceptable from you. We expect more out of you," and you know what? It even goes on a little bit today. But I'm older now, so I know how to take it better. You know, when you're young, that's a lot of pressure on you. So.
What department did your father supervise in?
My dad supervised in trim area, and then he moved into environmental services, sanitation. They used to take care of the upkeep of the factory.
And so the department that you hired in?
I hired in as hard trim repair on on the A line, what they called. As a matter of fact, when I came home, and my dad said, well, where are you working? And I told him, I'm working in repair, and he said, you can't be working in repair. It's a high seniority job, and so that's what they said. He asked me who my boss was, and told him it was Gary Bobeer, and my dad used to work with him on the assembly line. And I said that, and he just couldn't believe it. And so he asked me where I was. My father was working days at that time, I was working nights. So he asked me where I was, and I tried to explain to him where I was. I actually got lost in there when I first couple days. I forgot where I was supposed to be, or I couldn't remember. And I actually had to walk the whole line until I seen some familiar faces, because I couldn't find my way back.
One more question. I want to go back a little bit. Being a child of a worker and a supervisor, were there any kind of company picnics, management, family outings that you did as a child? Do you remember any things like that?
I remember my father played baseball for the UAW 602, and they had a baseball league back then, and we would go to family picnics, and they always had a big baseball game, and seeing that unity, and that's when we get on the UAW side. My father became management, so he got out. He wasn't UAW, but when he would go to the UAW meetings, I would try to peek in there, and they would even kick me out of there too and say, "No, you can't be listening to this," you know. But I remember the unity, the solidarity song. I can remember that when I was a little boy, and back then they used to sing that at the union meetings. Yeah, I believe in the beginning of the union meetings.
Yeah.
Solidarity forever. So, you know, there was just so much emotions wrapped up in that place for me that I saw as a little boy.
Now, as a little child, did you ever, growing up in the area, did you ever remember any strikes or anything that might have happened when you were a child?
I don't remember seeing them, but I remember when my father was on strike and not working, and things were tight, and I remember the food stamps were coming into effect, and you know, later on when I got hired in, there was guys that my dad worked with, and they were telling me detail how that was. They were out for a long time and striking, you know, how cold it was outside, and had to make fires and stuff like that.
Can you remember what year it was?
I want to say 1970.
Gary, Judy, do you remember what the strike was about, what they went on strike for?
No.
Did your father ever talk about that? Or?
No, I don't remember. I can remember him showing me his check stub, and it wasn't very much money.
The strike pay?
Yeah.
Check stub?
Yeah. And you know, he said he had to tighten up. Had a problem with food stamps when I was a kid. I didn't like those things. So,
so was that an emotional time? I mean, for your father, did he ever show any emotion? Or I mean, did you ever detect fear in him? Or
yeah,
anger,
he was afraid, and it was also kind of good because he was home with us. And my dad was he would go into work. I would get out of work at school at about 3 o'clock, and then my father would have to go in, I think back then about, I don't know, 3:30 or 3:45, right around then. So I didn't really have much time with my dad until the weekends. So he'd go to work and on night shift, and so he wanted to be home with us, but you know, when the strike was going on, but you know, he had a. We wanted to be back at work too because we had such a big family.
So that's I think that's something that we Earl Nicholson that we haven't covered. How often did you actually see your father? Even when he was working and when he was not working. I mean, do you remember, as you were growing up, do you remember him, whether when he was around and when he wasn't around?
He wasn't around a lot when I had functions. Every once in a while, he would take he would come home and go to the function, and he'd go back to work. And about 9 or 10, I was starting to have a problem with it. And believe it or not, I was starting to resent that place a little bit too. Once I got older, I realized what, you know, you got to support your family. My dad wasn't real happy about it himself. I was quite angry with him one night that he couldn't go to a function of mine, and he ended up coming back home, and instead of going back to work, he came back home and he went up to my room and talked to me about, you know, I have to work. You know, maybe later I'll be able to go on day shift and have enough seniority. But right then it hit me. I couldn't be mad at my father anymore. He was explaining it to me, what he had to do. And that's where I had to really start growing up. And also, you know, I was the oldest of 6 kids, so I'd help my mom a lot. And my dad depended on me. So
you were the oldest son in your family?
Yep. I can remember with my dad working nights, my bedroom was faced the front of the house, and I can remember my father would come home 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would like wind down, and I can remember looking out my window and seeing him on the front porch in the lawn chair relaxing, smoking a cigarette, just gazing.
Would he ever bring any friends home with him?
Matter of fact, if they worked a little bit longer, my dad used to have a mudroom.
You'll have to explain that.
Mudroom is we used to take our boots and stuff off before he went in the house, and so he wouldn't get the house all full of snow or mud or whatever. And my dad was pretty good friends with Art at Harry's Bar, and they would put beer in there, and my dad would sell beer after work over there. So I remember hearing guys coming in and.
So you're trying to tell me your father was operating a blind pig in your house?
Yeah. Yep. My dad was doing that, and he'd take the money to Art the next day. And, you know, there was some, you know, we have some friends benefits for my father over there at Harry's. But my dad did that. So I would hear, and every once in a while my father would have card games in the basement. And there was a guy named Jim Bosley that worked at the plant, and he had a real distinguished voice that was rough. And when I met him and I saw him, I knew exactly who he was. And I remember as a little boy being in my room, I remember him, that raspy voice he had in the basement, hearing him in my home. Didn't even know this guy, but when I hired in, I knew I heard that voice, and I knew and I asked my dad, who was he? Well, in front of mine, and you were at the house? Well, I used to come to the card games, and right then I knew who he was.
So, your dad would come home, and friends would come over. Would you get up and go down to see what they were doing?
I used to go down there and peek, and I can remember seeing millions and millions of cigarette buds on the floor, smoky and everything. And I can remember my dad, he didn't really clean it up right away, so I'd go down there, and me and my brother would go downstairs. In the morning, we would find coins or something on the floor, you know.
So, Jim Bosley was a supervisor.
Yep, and he is another guy that really expected a lot of stuff out of me.
So, but I mean, when the people came back to your house, I mean, it wouldn't just be, it would be supervisors, line personnel, everybody, people.
Yeah, my dad had a lot of friends on. Hourly, and once my dad became management, he lost a lot of his friends too, and I knew that he didn't come around much, and that was one of the main reasons why I didn't go on salary. I wanted to in my heart, but there was a lot of things that went along with it, and it's like, no way, I wasn't going to give all that stuff up just to make a little bit more money or prestige or whatever. And
the price is too high. Marilyn Coulter. Alex, do you remember how old were you when your dad went from being an hourly worker to a management worker?
I think I was 12 years old when that happened. And I actually, you know, that was kind of a good thing for our family because my dad made more money. And my dad went to work every day with a tie on, and I was proud of him. I mean, I was really proud of my father. I mean, he used to come home all grungy, and he was tired. And but you know, I didn't know. That's a normal thing. You know, once you hire in a plant, and you find out about there's a union there. And back then there was a white line. You were either on this side or on the union side or the management side. And those are things you had to think about seriously if you really wanted to do that, because if you wanted to be hourly, there was some sacrifices that you had to make, and my father's was his family.
Now, Alex, they said that it used to be that, like, I know hourly personnel would work days or nights, but at any time did your father go from days to nights as a supervisor, or did he work straight nights, or did he?
Yeah, he did.
Did that make it a little bit better for you once he became a management person?
Yeah,
he was able to.
Well, sort of, because, you know, after when I got older, I didn't really want him around because it was discipline or something. We used to get away with a lot with my mom, you know, and I can remember my dad calling and getting on us or something, or said he was going to come home at lunch or something, and so we make sure we were in bed by that time because I didn't want to, you know, get it talking to. But no, once he made that switch, I was older, so you know he was able to, you know, come to some of my football games in high school, and then when I went to the prom and stuff like that. I mean, you know, he went to my graduation. He wasn't going to miss that for anything. But you know, it was important for me to have him around, you know, when girls entered my life. So, and I was quite proud of my father and my mom. And I, you know, a lot of my girlfriends I would bring home prom. You know, I wanted my dad there. You know.
Now, was your mother a stay-home mom? Since she had six kids, did she work home?
My mom's worked at Everhart's grocery store here, and she was a head cashier. So, whenever my dad had a switch, they switched. My dad was on days, my mom worked nights. And then when my dad had to go to nights, my mom switched to days.
So it worked out.
So we had somebody home.
Earl Nicholson. Alex, your father was a UAW employee working the line. And he went on supervision. Could you tell me how that happened, and was there an emotional change around the house when that happened?
I'm almost positive that he went on management because it was more money. And yeah, there was a change in our house because my father had more money, so things were a lot easier, especially on him and his body. And
was your father in pain?
No, he wasn't in pain, but as far as just, you know, he worked there, and when you went on management, you supervised, so, you know, he was getting older, and my dad was a good boss, and I've heard a lot of guys tell me that, boy, they have to relax, boy, wish your dad was back, and so, you know, my dad was the kind of guy that knew the contract, and knew well how to pick their battles, and if someone did their job, he just didn't bother them, you know. Cut a little bit of slack, they'll get to it, you know, and had faith in his workers.
Gary, Judy, so your father's on management, and so you say it changed the household atmosphere a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about the neighborhood and if what it was like, and how the neighbors, what their perception of Fisher Body was, and if your father ever talked with the neighbors about the plant and what they thought of the plant in their area. Excuse me.
Well, I'll start off by saying the neighborhood that I grew up in, all those houses there were built by factory workers at that plant in the early 30s and 40s. There was a lot of retirees that lived there still when I was a little boy. And so whenever there was a strike or, you know, later on in the 80s when they were having problems with the paint and it was putting like a flaky stuff, black flakes in the air, and they were getting at people's cars and they were really happy about it. And we would be out there cleaning our cars and just washing your cars in your driveway, and there'd be a couple neighbors would come over and say stuff to Dad about it, and what are they going to do about it, and really my dad really had no control over that, and a lot of it was, you know, people were moving in there and making a decision that if you're going to live by a factory, well, those are the things that you're going to have to deal with. And so as a family, we kind of took offense to that. You know, we liked living there, so it didn't really bother me, none. It didn't bother my father. We just washed it off. You know, we never really got angry about it or anything. So we just kind of, this is where we live, and this is the conditions that we accept, you know.
Alex.
Marilyn Coulter.
Living in the neighborhood, were the people who work here, were they good neighbors to the neighborhood in terms of parking, in terms of respecting your neighborhood as employees that just came into the plant to work and then leave the area?
Oh, yeah. There was never any kind of violence or anything. You know, it'd be a little bit busy there when they would go home, but it was always set up after we were out of school, just getting out of school, and then they would come out, or sometimes they would get out just before we get out of school. So their timing was pretty much perfect. I can't think of any car accident or, you know, any kind of, catastrophe that happened as far as...
Or any inconvenience.
Right. You know, that there was an accident or something.
Now, speaking of, you went to Verlinden Elementary School and you went to Sexton High School. I know that the security guards used to help do the crossing of the children at Verlinden.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Vaguely. Yeah, vaguely. Mm-hmm. Vaguely. They did a lot of things that they weren't really supposed to do. Back then, that was a different kind of security guard, because most of those security guys used to work on the assembly line.
So do you remember some of the things that they did special for your children at Verlinden? Some of the things that the General Motors employees did for the children in the area?
They would come over to the school sometimes and help out, you know, or talk, you know, about safety or something, don't hit the building with anything or something like that. That was going on when they were little.
Baseballs
and rocks. Or we used to fly our kites purposely, and I would do it. I'd fly my kite on top of the factory and on top, and I would purposely try to get my kite to go on top of those smokestacks so I could burn my kite. And they didn't like that. They would come out and say, you know, and
you got your kite that high?
Oh, yeah. Yep, we got our kites that high.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we used to just try to steer it. Now, did I ever do it? No. It never burned up in front of us. But, you know, we were trying to do it, and they saw what we were trying to do. And we had to pull it down or something there.
So, we're gonna switch directions now. We're gonna go to your factory, the factory experience now. You graduate from high school. You've hired in the Fisher Body. Your first day, Well, what, tell us, which gate did you enter from?
The Verlinden Gate. So I went downstairs, and it's the same stairs that my dad, I used to walk as I was a little boy. He wanted to go down there, and he said, no, you need to go walk back home. I couldn't walk down those stairs, so I was going down those stairs this time.
And what was it like to go down those stairs?
Well, I almost fell because it was quite steep, and I wasn't really paying attention. I was really, you know, looking, you know, I wasn't paying attention with my feet, but I was quite eager to get in there.
And your first day in, you walk into the factory. What did they do? They take you to a room, or
a bunch of us were in a bunch there, and they said for us to sit on this picnic table. And
where was this picnic table at?
Upstairs, and that was the beeline, you know. And we were waiting there, and all of a sudden this guy come. It was Gabriel Beer, and I didn't really know this. I just first time I seen this guy. Well, this guy prior was one of my dad's rivals. They were on utility together. They used to fight a lot with each other, and about what job they were supposed to do or whose turn it was, and they were both on management. They liked each other, but they were pretty rivals. And he came up, and he didn't know who I was, and he just picked 12 guys, you, and I was one of them. Took us downstairs, and there was a door, not painted, on the ground. There was a bunch of parts next to it. And he said, you will put this bat together and take it apart. Put this bat together. You will know this door like the back of your hand. So here we are putting this thing together. And the door's inside a door before they put the door panel on. It's sharp. And we were cutting our hands. And we didn't put gloves. We put some gloves on so we wouldn't cut our hands. And we were trying to figure this thing out. And we did. And started the night shift. They were down to one shift at one time, and they restarted the night shift with a bunch of kids in repair, and that was rough.
Repair. You yep. hired into repair.
Yep.
Was there shock? I mean, for the people around you?
Yeah, we didn't really know what repair was, and at least I didn't. When I went home and I told my father where I was working, he said, you cannot be working in repair. That's a high seniority job. So that's what they told me. And he asked me who my boss was, and I told him. And he knew I just couldn't pop up that name. He knew Gary Beaubier and knew where he was working. So he said, whereabouts are you guys? And I told him, and he came. I was on night, so my dad was working day, so he stayed after work, and he come down and said, boy, did you luck out. You know, back then in repair, I did every sixth job. But I had some checks I had to do, and I had to fix something, and then I had to make sure I got to the next job. And it's the kind of job where you had a lot of responsibility. If you let something go, the pressure was hard. It was a consequence, even getting time off of work.
And we're talking, you had not even had your 90 days in yet. So you're in repair. You're doing repair on the night shift. You get your 90 days in. Was there a change?
Yeah, before we got our 90 days in, we'd work a shift, and if we let things go and we didn't see, well, they would take us upstairs and just ream us out for about an hour. So, threatened us that maybe we might get fired.
Terry Judy,
could you explain to us what 90 days, what is that all about?
90 days is you need to get your 90 days in, and you'll get union representation.
So
you were on probation, basically. So they said, you better keep your
nose clean. So you were really under a lot of pressure because you hired into a repair job that with no experience and just learning the job, and you didn't have 90 days in the union. So
yeah, had a boss, and I thought about going in the Marines, and I didn't. And here I was. I had a boss that was like treating us like we were in the Marines, and So there was a lot of pressure. I, you know, like I said, I was 17. I used to go home and tell my dad I was going to get fired, I think, if I missed one more thing. And I was afraid because I didn't want to get fired. I wanted to be there, but also I kept thinking I didn't want to. I thought about my father a lot. I wanted to look good around my surroundings because of my father, too.
So tell us, Alex, you're in repair. You're under tremendous pressure. You're trying to get your 90 days in. Were your co-workers, did they play any pranks on you? I mean, was there any initiation or hazing before or after you got your 90 days in?
Yeah, they used to throw us in the trunk and you'd go through water test. Well, me being 110 pounds, I believe, I was able to get out. And I was skinny enough to get out of there. And, but stuff like that, yeah. Or they did a lot of things in there, like drop the cans, and they would scare the crap out of you. And
drop a can?
Drop a trash can, a barrel, on the ground, and it's pretty loud. And, I wanted to move out of my house when I hired in there. You know, I didn't. They would tease me about living with mama, papa, sister stuff all the time, and I didn't shave yet. And I had a girlfriend, and I remember when I asked for a night off so I can go take her to the prom, and boy, did I get a lot of grief for that one.
You weathered.
I would do all that stuff all over again if I could.
Alex, Mill Coulter, did you get to take her to the prom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I told my boss and Gary, and he started laughing. And he said, well, what's going to happen if you don't take her? Well, you got to be here. It's like, well, then I don't think I'm going to be seeing her that much anymore. So so he liked me. He really expected a lot out of me. I didn't really like him that much when I first met him. But later on, I understand what he was trying to do.
So, Alex, when you hired in, you're working in the plant, you're working second shift. You hired in what, March, you say?
Yeah, March 27th.
And then the summer comes. What did you think about the environment? Was it what you expected? Was it hot? Was it cold? What was it like working on the line once you got
it? It was hot. And back then, we were allowed to wear, and a lot of people, even in this room remember, but I used to wear just a pair of shorts and some, you didn't have to wear socks. You guys had some leather shoes on, so I wear leather tennis shoes or something, and with no shirt. And it was hot in there. Quite hot.
You didn't have to wear protective clothing? You never worried about getting cut or anything?
No.
Did you have protective
clothing? We had to wear safety glasses, but that changed later on. They had to wear shirts and stuff, but it was so hot in there that they just didn't really say much about it.
Alex, Earl Nicholson. Alex, did you notice when it got hot, you noticed when your people were wearing shorts, and there were women there, correct?
Yeah.
So, what were the men wearing? What were the women wearing in trim shop? It's hot. Was there ever a time when anybody was sent home because they weren't wearing something that was appropriate?
Yeah, when I hired in there, my dad said, you're going to hear things, you're going to see things. Well, I saw something, I was already 18 by then, but, we were all wearing shirtless, and there was this lady there,
do you remember her name?
Yeah, but I don't want to mention her name, and she came in with no shirt on, and boy, was I mean, it's like, wow.
Excuse me, Alex. Did you just say a woman came to work without her shirt?
Well, she came in, and then she saw us, so she took her. She's rough, and she took her shirt off, and the place went nuts, and they shut the line down, and that was my...
Was that
okay? That was my introduction to manhood, I think.
Alex, she took her shirt off in the plant. It's in the summertime. You have to tell us, what's the story around why she took her shirt off and what happened with all this?
Well, we were allowed, males were allowed to take the shirts off, and it was because it was hot, and she was obviously hot, and she wanted to take hers off. And, but that ended that. Very next day, we weren't allowed to take her shirts off anymore. So I can understand what, you know, where she was coming from. Everything has to be fair there. And so she kind of was laying the law down, you know, hey, they do, how come I can't? So that's why she did what she did.
Did she get time off from work for doing that?
I think they tried to, but they couldn't because of the fact that we had ours off. So they knew they had to change that quickly. Yeah.
So this happened. So can you tell us what the environment was like? You're young. You're working night shift. You're not even, you know, you're in your early teens. What? Your late teens, rather. What was it like? How did you pass the time? What was it like? Help me see what the night shift was like.
Well, the night shift started at, I believe, 5 o'clock back then. And, I didn't have much of a social life. A lot of my friends were in college, and they were going out during the weeknights. And I missed a lot of stuff, but the thing is, being in there at those times, a lot of my friends were getting in trouble with alcohol or whatnot, and I always thought, well, I was at work, and, you know, with those hours, that kind of got me away from that part of it. You know, I was working, and so I didn't, you know, I didn't get in trouble that much with, you know, or I didn't get in trouble at all with alcohol. And,
inside the plant. How did the young people, were there a lot of young people on night shift?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't the only one.
How did it function? What was it like working night shift? How'd you guys pass the time?
We would goof around once in a while. Once we got comfortable, I mean, we would be mad sometimes because we wanted the night off. We couldn't get it. It was hard to go in there sometimes because it was so nice out before we went in there.
Were you allowed to have radios? Did you listen?
Oh, yeah. That was our out. That was my out. A lot is I'd listen to music.
So it was easy to listen to music inside of a noisy plant?
Well, sometimes everybody put it on the same station, so boy, it was pretty loud. And you know, we were whistling while we worked. You know, so. But I can remember when hearing if we had a breakdown or something, and they would say, line time for the night shift is, and they would, you know, say 4 hours, and there'd be a cheer in there, a cheer, and people would just be happy, you know, that we were going to get out, and we were free for a night or whatever, and I remember those cheers, you know.
Alex, Gary, Judy, you lived in the neighborhood. Did you ever hear those cheers from your house?
No.
Because they would rock the whole plant.
I can remember my dad coming home. And they said they had a breakdown or something. But, no, I wouldn't hear those cheers. You know, I just...
Or do you think maybe those cheers came in with the younger generation? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, back when my dad hired in, you couldn't even have a radio in there. And so we were allowed a lot of things. And I think we were a more wilder bunch. More vocal bunch than anything, and I think we had a lot of ideas too. We were
So tell me, Alex, you know, Earl Nicholson, a year, you know, time has gone by, 6 months, a year, you're starting to get used to working in a factory. I'm assuming that you were still in repair at this time, after you got your 90 days in.
Yeah, I was in repair.
Was there a sense of camaraderie amongst the employees? People, you know, they come together as a team, where everybody was working together well, or?
In repair, we did. We kind of helped each other. We were making, when I hired in, I was making $10.05 an hour, and that was a lot of money for a 17-year-old. And that was the top pay, I believe, if you weren't on skilled trades, as far as assembly work. And there was a lot of envious people that wanted to be in repair.
Maryland Culture, Alex, working repair, now, being a repair person, did you have to work longer hours than the regular line?
Yeah, they'd ask you if you wanted to work. They had this, at the very end of the line, it was called the horseshoe. And the car wasn't moving, but they put this car in a horseshoe area, and you could work on it. And I used to go there sometimes and work till, I don't know, maybe 3 hours longer, so I'd be like 5 a.m. It was good money. A couple of guys would go over there, and they'd ask if we wanted to go and, you know, make sure these jobs are okay before they shut them downtown. So I would go and work sometimes over there. And I was able to buy some nice things when I was young.
So, Alex, you touched on an issue that I'd like to explore a little bit. You said that there was camaraderie amongst your group, but there seemed to be a little envy from other people. Could you explain that?
Well, being in repair, sometimes it's basically like this. In repair, they're just sometimes people have problems with their putting their job together prior to where repair's at. And there'd be nights where there wasn't very much repair. So we didn't work, but then there was nights we worked. We had a really, put things together and there was more money. And I wasn't stuck on a job one by one. I did every sixth job, and I was on a team, so I was on the right side, and I had a partner that was on the left side.
So you're saying how here you are, a young man, you're in repair. It's a high seniority job. How were you treated by the regular line workers?
Well, some of them would say to me, and I had a couple buddies too, that their dads worked there, and I want to say that we pretty much all of us. Our dads worked there. And they said, the only reason why you're there is because your dad's on management or something like that. And I heard that a lot. And I knew it wasn't true with me because Gary didn't even know me when he picked me. He was awful surprised when he found out who I was later on. So you'd get guys saying stuff to you about that. And I didn't like it too much. I never really said anything back. And I kind of took it personal a little bit. That was more money, and you didn't do every single job.
So tell us, Gary Bolvere didn't know that who your father was. What was it like when he found out? I mean, was he shocked or? I mean.
Yeah, because he was before he became a supervisor. Him and my dad were on utility and. The reputation that utility had back then is they didn't want to do anything, and they were both like that. They didn't want to do really too much. So when I was in there, now I'm not saying I was perfect, but I took my job seriously, and he knew my dad, and my dad took his job seriously too, but not as serious as I did, and I was real picky about things.
But the moment that he found out who you were, actually were.
He couldn't believe that I was my father. I mean, I looked like my dad, but our mannerisms were, here I liked old music, and here I knew things about you know, the 50s and 60s, and he just was amazed that that was my dad. My dad never really shared those kind of things with anybody. My dad wasn't from here, so he was quite amazed. So, you know, that kind of hurt me too, because he even expected more out of me, even more. And he was trying to get me on hourly or salary.
Alex, was there anything...
Marilyn Coulter.
Was there anything about coming into the plant and working on the shift that might have shocked you or surprised you, or what you had, as opposed to what you had envisioned?
You know, people would get kind of mad there a lot, and it was pretty vocal. Mm-hmm. And I saw a couple fights in there. And a lot of the arguments, like with hourly and management, where they were just like a baseball game, the umpire and manager just right in their face, and yelling, and so you really had to suck up a lot of things, you know. And if somebody's gonna push your buttons, and you know, you were pretty much allowed to swing if you wanted to. I mean, you're going to be off a week, but you weren't going to be thrown in jail or anything. But
what was it like working in a facility that large? Was it? Some people say it's like the city. Yes, did you find it to be that way?
Yeah, there was a city within a city, and I don't know. It's kind of an awesome thing, because You could look down and see two lines, and you could see people working, you know, and you could watch this car being built, you know. So, and you know, back then there was a lot of people working, and then we started seeing it disappearing. So when they started cutting jobs and everything, boy, you didn't see very many heads, and that was worrisome.
So can you please explain, when you said two lines, you saw two lines running at the same time? Can you explain that a little bit?
The two different vehicles were on upstairs. So this car, if you didn't know, if you weren't familiar with that place, you couldn't tell where it began or ended on the assembly line. If you knew that place and you knew right where it started and right where it ended and what line was what, like I said, there was masses of people upstairs just it's assembly.
You said that you worked in repair for a year, yes?
I worked in repair for 12 years.
For 12 years you did it. So, during those 12 years, oftentimes union workers will call each other brother and sister. Did you find your workers to be a family? And what types of things did your family do, as for lunch, holidays, things like that? Let us know what that's like.
Well, one thing that I've always felt, and that when the holidays came around, everybody kind of came together, and there was food, and you know, we had a good time. And somebody had dire straits there at the factory. I saw a lot of people giving a lot of money, you know, helping to help somebody out. And you know, GM has this image, you know, Generous Motors, but, you know, the worker there, if somebody's in trouble, some person's kid's sick, and we saw a lot of cans and a lot of money going in to help a lot of families, or a lot of, you know, if you lost somebody in your family, there was always, when you got back, there was always some kind of card with a bunch of signatures on it with money packed in there, and a lot of caring there.
So, Alex, you've talked about brothers and sisters. Did you develop any friendships inside the factory? Permanent, long-lasting friendships?
Oh, yeah. There was a guy by the name of Rick Smith, and we were the same age. And he said he was from Nashville. And me being a city kid, I didn't get out of the city that much, and I thought he meant Tennessee. And it was, you know, 30... What do you mean? You can live up here now or what? And he goes, no, it's over there by Charlotte. And I vaguely knew Charlotte. I vaguely knew Grand Lodge, and it was really close. But you know, back then you just didn't leave your homestead. You didn't really go off anywhere, and so I, you know, we became good friends. We're still friends today, and you know, experiencing, you know, marriage and having a family and stuff like that, and you know, grandparents, parents passing away or whatnot, you know, been to funerals and stuff. So that kind of stuff is really like a really close net there. You know, when somebody's hurt and that you met there and you work with and you talk with and stuff, it you take part in, you know, in their family things too sometimes, vice versa.
So tell me, did you ever participate in the shop dinners or the events that departmental dinners?
Oh,
that
they would all throw? The time, yeah.
And what were those like? What kind of foods would be there? What
oh, sometimes you know, me being Spanish, you know, I would bring a Spanish dish, or like, you know, that's another thing about that place. So there's a lot of hunters there, and fishermen there. And they used to play a joke on me, and you'd like a piece of meat or something, and I'd say, yeah, and I'd just eat it, and they'd say, well, you just ate grizzly bear or something, or you know, some kind of fish that I would never try before. But I tried a lot of different foods there and liked a lot of it.
All right, fantastic. Maryland culture.
Can you tell me, what were breaks like? What types of things did you do for breaks? Since repair, you had a little bit more time. What types did you read? Did you play cards? Did you do any of those type of things during your
breaks?
Yeah,
I read. I read a little bit. You know, I listened to music. I didn't have a cell phone then, but I would listen to their trivia question. And I used to try to run to the payphone and try to get the answer, and I'd get away with it sometimes. But I don't know, we would sing while we worked or something. It was kind of fun because after lunch it was a little more relaxed and, you know, everybody was kind of winding down a little bit. So, you know, you saw people singing and dancing around and stuff like that. And it was kind of funny, and you'd see a side of people that you didn't really know, and you'd put your guard down, you know, and you knew if somebody was having a bad day or something, you know. And
so, tell me, Alex, you're in repair. Were you assigned a locker, or did you have to have a locker made for you, or did you ever have a skilled trade guy make a locker up for you?
Yeah, I had my godfather worked there, and he was millwright. He made me a wooden box that I still own today, and said my name on it, and I used to put my tools in there, and then he made me a metal one later, and then I was able to buy that too, and I got those both at my home. Used to put all my stuff in there and lock it up, you know. I had my snacks in there too, and extra pair of shoes or something, or you know, a couple magazines, pictures, my family.
So you just mentioned that the skilled trades person that helped you, you were related to. Were there any other members of your family that worked in the factory?
My sister worked there for a short time. She took, they had a thing called a buyout, and they gave you some money if you wanted to leave early, and she left early.
When did she hire in?
1984.
And she worked for?
I think she worked there for about 3 years.
She didn't like it?
She didn't like it that much, no.
Marilyn Coulter?
Alex, you told us that how, when you were a child, you used to sell things to the hourly employees through the window to help that. Did you participate in vending, in buying or selling when you were in the plant?
Oh, yeah. Even today, at the plant, you know, my daughter was in selling something for school, and I'd take stuff there and I'd sell it. And then if somebody I knew asked me, do you want to buy some cookies or candy bar? Well, then, you know, you always could. You always knew that you could sell that stuff there.
Did that bring back memories for you?
Oh yeah, because I won a lot of contests when I was a little boy. Because I knew I could sell stuff there, and I did. I would sell a lot of stuff there. Matter of fact, my friends would come with me and try to sell their stuff too. And I always sold a little bit more because they were gonna buy it from me than my friends. But that's how generous that place was.
That's sweet. I was a scout too. I always remember. This one girl always outsold me. I later found out it's because her father worked at Fisher Body. We know that you had a shocking moment when the young lady took her shirt off. Can you tell us what was your happiest moment working there, and what was your saddest?
Well, let's see. I think I've had so many happy moments there.
Share one.
Well, I bought a 1971 Oldsmobile Cutlass, and an 83, and my dad helped me work on it, and took a lot of pride in that. I bought something with the money that I earned. Something that I wanted since I was a little boy, and that job made that happen, and my dad was helping me work on it too. So I got so many things wrapped up in that car. Later on, when Oldsmobile ended, they did a journal, wanted to talk to me because I lived in the neighborhood, and they told me it was just like a little blur. And when I woke up the next day, I was up on the front page of the journal, and I didn't know that was going to happen. When I went to work, I didn't buy a paper, and a lot of my friends were screaming at me, and they were patting me on the back, and you know, it was on the national news, and I let all my feelings out about that place, and they wrote about it, you know, and I was real proud of it and overwhelmed about it. You know, my dad retired there. I was happy, but I was sad. When I received my 5-year tie pin, I was real happy about that. And my saddest moment was it's one of my saddest is when we. When we were working at that plant, we just built Oldsmobiles, and when they said they were going to take them out, and we were going to build a Grand Am, we were afraid. We didn't know what was going to happen. But when they shut down the plant, and they said they were going to end Olds, and then a little bit later, they were going to close the plant down, and that hurt. They announced they were going to shut my school down. So, things as far as my neighborhood, I always thought they were going to be there, and they're going to tear it down. So, a lot of me is in there, and a lot of things that I enjoy looking at, even when I'm an adult, and I show my daughter these things, and so they hurt. That's my childhood. You know, I grew up there, and you know, I used to hang out there when I was upset about something, I had a lot of happy times there. And as a little boy, even working there. That's probably the saddest moment. But we got a bright future with a new plant. And I'm over there now, and I went there early, and I take a lot of pride in that, you know. But I don't want to see this place go. I always thought it would just take another car there, and it's not. They're tearing it down as we speak right now.
Gary, Judy, Alex, you recently had another happy moment happen to you. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What happened recently that was happy time?
Well, I got, before I go into it, I'll speak real quickly on, I wasn't really involved in my union, and I used to have this image about, I don't need my union, and they only take care of people that are in trouble, and I got to go up to Black Lake, and reality hit me hard there. Found out what this place done for me and prior, and I got right into it, and it was like a spiritual awakening for me. Anyway, changed my whole outlook on how I saw things, and thinking that, you know, this is what I want to do. I'm happy. I don't need anybody to, for my rights or whatever. And anyway, I got involved in my union.
Alex, before you go further, will you please explain to the people what Black Lake is?
Black Lake is a facility that education that tells about the UAW and the history of it with Walter Ruther, and it's a place to go where we can get schooling and get away from everything. It's a beautiful place to go to, and it's unity and solidarity. But anyway, when I came back home, a lot of people that knew prior what I said, and I was really trying to, you know, they knew something happened to me. And Art, he called me up to his office, and I really didn't know what to do with it. And I was trying to get people to go, and people were telling me, no, they're not going. It's like, you know, and so Art kind of really helped me with putting all that in perspective, you know. And
was that Art from Harry's Bar?
Yeah, Art Luna, our union president. And
and you were trying to get people to go.
Trying to get people to go.
Go to Black Lake union meetings.
Get involved in the union and whatnot. And you know, it's a thing that we need to do, or it's going to go away. And so anyway, I ended up, I was given the Region 1C for a while, and I didn't really pay that much attention to it, and they had a raffle, and unions are shrinking, so they were trying to think of a fundraiser to get some more funds in and stuff, and they bought a vehicle, and they sold tickets, and they were going to give this raffle it off. Well, I ended up winning it. And the thing is that at that moment, I kind of forgot about it going on. And at that moment that they were having the raffle, I was really unaware of it. I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't know what day or what time it was going to be. And I didn't really think about it. I'm pretty involved at Lansing Delta Township. It's a new factory, and it's going to open up here pretty soon, and with a new vehicle. And I was working, I was really getting into my work, and I was a little frustrated. And I got a call saying that I won this thing, and I was, I didn't know what they were talking about at first. And they said it's this vehicle, and they were reminding me, and it's like, oh my gosh, and I remember thinking, geez, I was so mad at my job and not knowing that something really wonderful was happening. And that really put me in perspective too. It's like, gosh, why get mad over silly things? And anyway, I won this 2005 SSR. It's yellow, and the top goes down, and my daughter is going to love this thing. And I take a lot of pride in that too, because I kind of see that's from my UAW, you know, so I'm going to keep it.
Alex, we've gone into the Earl Nicholson. We've gone into the union area now, and we've started to touch on that subject. What was your union experience like on the line? How did you perceive the union when you were young? How did you perceive it when you were old and older? Did you ever actually need the union for anything while you were on the line?
No, not really. I would always try to talk to my boss or something about it. Every now and then I had to call a committee man. The thing is, all along, I had a couple friends that were committee men, and all along they were trying to get me to go to uni meetings, and I didn't want to go, and they were real patient with me. I mean, real patient with me, and just tried to encourage me to go, and then they asked me if I wanted to go to Black Lake, and I said, okay, I'll go, check this thing out.
But as the years went by, I mean, did you witness the union doing anything for its people? Was it a positive thing?
Yeah, it was a positive thing that I saw that they would, sometimes management would be unfair on a lot of things, or union would have to come in and reinstate what the contract says and to help people so they don't get taken advantage of. The union does a lot of things for even our community. Even if a brother or sister is, down and out, they'll do anything they can to help them. So
you're active in the union now, Alex. Could you tell us how that all came about?
When I went to Black Lake, it was all this literature and all these classes and explained what the union did, why you pay union dues, and I never really read anything. I kind of wondered, man, what are they doing all that money and stuff like that? I used to think that, and so I read all this stuff, and I was like, wow. And I was also ashamed of myself because I used to say things, when you're young, you say a lot of things you wish you'd never said, and said some things, and kind of believed in my head, things that about the union that weren't really great. But when I read all this stuff, I ended up locking myself in my room and reading all this stuff, and I was really getting myself into something else because I wasn't participating in what was going on up there. I wanted to read all this stuff, and Dan Fidoa came up and banged on my door and told me I need to get out of there and come down and hang out with the people, and I did. And he was explaining a little stuff to me about it, and so I didn't really know how to, grasp all that stuff. And anyway, one of the guys that would really prompt me was Rod Murray, and when I came home, he knew that something happened to me, and like I said earlier, Art took me upstairs, and we talked, and so I started getting involved.
So you started attending union meetings?
Yep. Started going to union meetings, and next thing you know, Rod Murray elected me to the... Nominated me for the election committee, which I used to say things about.
Nominated you to the election committee?
Yeah. Raised his hand, said I nominate Alex, and what they do is they write a bunch of people's names on a chalkboard, and then people vote, and I got on. So
what does the election committee do?
Well, they run the elections, they make sure the county's right, make sure that it's fairly done. There's no dishonesty in there, counting numbers more than once, be friendly. People come in.
Do you think that maybe one of the reasons that people voted you in was because you were a man that people could trust?
I'm pretty sure my experience in Black Lake had something to do with that, because a lot of people witnessed, and a lot of them was like, a lot of them was, what the hell happened to you, I'm pretty sure they had a great deal, and I'm pretty vocal as far as if I believe in something, and That's the wisdom of Rod Murray. He did that with me, and knowing that if somebody would speak anything against it, that I would say, no, this is what we do, and I was guilty of saying it, and I'm telling you right now, it's not. It's legit. Those, you know, there's no dishonesty in there whatsoever.
Marilyn Coulter.
Alex, can you tell me how much seniority did you have when you finally got turned around? Or I should say in light.
23 years seniority.
After 23 years. So it's not an immediate thing. Sometimes no. it's a while.
Yeah. Okay. So, I get involved and I like being on the election committee and I'm on the education committee now and I like that too. And, I like going to the union meetings. They're quite humorous sometimes and they're quite tense other times, but I think it's important to go to hear what's going on.
Alex, can you tell me, as somebody who didn't, how the union impacts the everyday line?
Well, they want to touch on our health care and our conditions of our job, you know, making sure that they're safe and they won't hurt our bodies later, that when we do retire. Union brings unity, helps bring unity and trust with one another, looking out for one another. Supporting our leaders, which they really need. They carry a big burden, and they need support, even whether it's you're doing a good job. It's basically, you know, it's nice when they hear that once in a while, because they take a lot of our burden from us.
So it's Earl Nicholson. It's nice to hear that, Alex, because you obviously. You were becoming mature and you're becoming aware. And you're telling me that the supervisors that you were around were all good. Did you ever have an experience with a supervisor that you would call a bad experience?
I had a few that when I was younger and where I had to call the union. And they were really rough with me as far as expectations of what I was supposed to do because of my father. Working there, being at management, I felt they weren't treating me like everybody else, and I kind of took offense to that sometimes. But on the other hand, I would kind of be hard on myself too.
So did you feel now that you're mature enough, do you look back on that? Do you feel that the union was a? Could you imagine? Let me put it this way: could you imagine working in a factory without a union?
No, absolutely not. The way things are run now is they'll cut your health care and they'll cut your pay in a minute, and our union protects us of that.
Marilyn Coulter.
Alex, as we draw close to an end, a couple of questions. First one being, you worked in a preferred job for 12 years, right from the street into a preferred job. How did it go for you going from that preferred job to a maybe less preferred job after those 12 years, going to a regular line job? How did that affect you?
Well, it really didn't. There was cutbacks, and I was a little afraid that, you know, the numbers were, they were laying off people, and you didn't see very many people there online anymore, and So I had to work online, but I liked it too, because really that's really what I expected when I hired in there. So I got to do that, and I still looked at stuff, you know, and found stuff sometimes.
Okay, question number two. You lived in the community. You grew up with it. You grew up with Fisher Body. While you worked there, it went from BOC to Lansing Car Assembly. What did you think about that, and what did you call the place?
I basically called that place my second home.
What did you think about the name changes? Did you call it Fisher Body? Did you call it
Lansing Car Assembly? I always called it Fisher. You know, I met Fisher, and when you say that around here, people, it didn't matter if they went to BOC or Lansing Car Assembly. They knew exactly where you were. But to be honest with you, I didn't really like it when it was BOC, but I didn't mind saying it, Lansing Car Assembly. I didn't mind that at all.
Another question. You seem to be very product loyal, company loyal. Have you always owned General Motors vehicle?
Yep.
All
right. Yep.
Tell me, Alex, have you ever used a twist in your any of your TAP funds that were available to you? Did you ever take any educational classes on TAP?
Oh, yeah. I took a few. I took a generator class and a snowblower class and a power wash class. So I was using those funds for that and learned a lot, a great deal on motors, which I really don't really know that much about.
Alex, as we come to a close, you grew up in this community, and you said, you know, the building had a lot to do with you. You become union active, but as we look across the street, they're tearing the plant down. And it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything, if there's anything that, once that building's gone, you'd like people to remember about that building, and how it affects you, what would it be?
Well, I hope there's some kind of marking there, for one thing. What that site was, what it mean to our community. I don't want people to forget about it. I guess it'd be nice if it would be like some kind of playground or some place for the elderly to be at. It's pretty much like prime land in the city, so, and it's pretty safe around here. So I would like to see, something, some kind of thing for people to live at. Maybe shop or something, a warm place to be, not a hectic place.
Alex, I want to say thank you for sharing your memories, and I can't think of a better person to have won that General Motors vehicle. And thanks for becoming an active UAW member. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
What you closing for?
Because of you.